The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Oh, yeah. And we're promoting that Seahawk broadcast tomorrow because it's playoff time for your Seahawks after battling and battling to get into the postseason. The Seahawks 10-6 record. They play the 10-6 Dallas Cowboys in Dallas. I will be at that game in Dallas, bringing you all the pregame coverage live here on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. Paul Moyer, Jordan Babineau, Michael Bumpus, they will join me, and we will have the very best Seahawks coverage you can possibly imagine. Live from Dallas tomorrow afternoon. I'm jumping on a 12:04 a.m. plane tonight.
Oh, so you'll be able to sleep on the plane.
Oh, yeah.
It's just real easy for you.
I'm always great at sleeping on planes. So, I'll be on the red eye. We'll get down there, and we will bring you Seahawks and Cowboys. And the Dow is up 750 points. A little early rally to start 2019. We're about 51 minutes away from the market closing, so we'll keep you posted. But right now, the Dow up about, 738 points. So we got some news, big-time stuff that we're going to keep an eye on throughout the afternoon. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, top story.
Of course, the big controversy here has been the police-involved shooting Seattle cops on New Year's Eve, where they shot and killed a 36-year-old man. And Seattle police released all the body cam footage from all of the officers. And man, I tell you what, thank goodness for body cam footage for a bunch of reasons. First of all, it protects the cops if it is a good shoot, because it's very difficult to watch this video and to think that this is somehow not a righteous shoot. These are cops who were charging after, chasing a guy who had a gun in his hand. They say that Iosia Falatago, he's the guy who was shot. According to the police, he pulled the loaded gun on the cops after a traffic stop. And after the shooting, he was found to be carrying cash and drugs. The cops repeatedly tell him, drop the gun, don't resist. Here is some of the initial chase from that body cam footage.
Expect any 450?
No.
Or more just shady, maybe as warrants.
Hey!
John 11, he's running. We're running northbound on Aurora into traffic. We're now going westbound on 96.
And they tell the suspect repeatedly, over and over, if you do not comply, because he did have a gun, and if you do not comply, we will have to shoot you.
Drop the gun, you're getting shot! You're getting shot! He stopped the gun!
They tell him over and over to drop the gun.
He's reaching! He's reaching! Don't shoot! Drop the gun! Drop the gun! Drop the gun, you're getting shot! You're getting shot! He stopped the gun!
The police department force investigation team is investigating the shooting. The guy was shot in the head and was killed in the midst of all of that. Here, the guy claimed he was not reaching for his gun. And there you hear what ended up being the fatal gunshot, which you heard from several different of the body cam footage.
We're taking him into custody.
Come on, come on, you're getting shot! You're getting shot!
Shots fired.
Are you good? Everyone good?
I'm good.
Shots fired. No officers down.
Okay, they wanted to make sure that none of their fellow officers had been shot in the midst of all of that. Now, this guy's family members, of course, are claiming that this was a bad shoot, that this never should have happened. For these cops, you have to understand, they want to go home at the end of the shift. You know, everyone's talking about how the guy who got shot was a father of two. But a lot of these cops have kids, too. And they're not doing illegal activity. They don't have drugs. They don't have a gun that they're not supposed to have. They're legally carrying. And these cops need to go home at the end of the shift. And yet the knee-jerk reaction, because around here we have such a powerful anti-cop mentality. And it starts at the very top. It starts with members like the Seattle City Council's Kashama Sawant, who calls police officers who have been exonerated in previous shootings. She calls them murderers. I mean, it is a despicable way that we treat our police officers who are, A, trying to protect the public, because who knows what somebody with drugs and a gun is capable of doing to innocent people. And number two, the cops want to go home at the end of shift. And yet we have such a powerful anti-cop mentality around here that people like Sawant will call cops murderers. It's horrifying when you realize the lack of support that our officers have. They literally laying down their lives to try to protect us. And if we don't have the cops' support, and we've seen a lot of depolicing going on in Seattle because of the lack of support, because we have city leaders who have decided to side with the criminals instead of with the cops. And we've seen that there has been depolicing. And with the depolicing, crime goes up. But it's tough when you're a cop to slam your head against a brick wall day after day after day, knowing that you're not going to get any support from your city leadership. Our news partners at Channel 7, they talked to a family member of the dead guy. And they said that he was really a smart dude.
He had a promising life. There's no reason for him not being here.
He had potential to do anything he wanted to.
Well, why wasn't he starting to reach that potential before he's out running around with drugs and a gun on New Year's Eve? That doesn't sound like somebody who's striving for their potential. The mom was at the scene as well.
He did what this world allowed him to do. The only chances they gave him was the chance to try to survive in this world. Bills have to be paid. Kids have to be fed.
And whose responsibility is all this? Channel 4, ComoNews.com, they're claiming that the guy dropped his gun. They say that in the video it appears he dropped his gun.
I understand the gun was there. Totally understand that. But they'd already released the gun. The gun was gone. It was away from him.
And he says that this should have been handled differently.
I hear in the video, I can hear him saying, I'm not grabbing it. I just hope that it doesn't happen to somebody else, no matter what the situation might be. It needs to stop.
So the chaos of situations like this are brought about by people with drugs, with guns, encountering the police. It was a stolen handgun, according to the cops. And I certainly see nothing. You can see that whole body cam footage. All of it. We've got it posted at mynorthwest.com, and they've slowed it down in certain areas. They've circled areas where you can see where the gun is. And I see nothing in that video that would suggest to me that this was a bad shoot in any way. It all started, they ran a license plate check on the car. They discovered the registered owner of the vehicle had a suspended license. They saw the driver make an unsafe lane change. And that started the chain of events. And even with all of that, if you realize, okay, I'm getting pulled over. I have a stolen gun. Yeah, I'm going to go away for having a stolen gun, no doubt. But you're still going to be alive if you make the right decisions when you encounter cops. And everything in this story seems to have been predicated on real bad decision-making by the guy who ended up getting shot and killed. And so I'm sure we will continue to hear a lot of vilification of the police officers. We'll have family members who will be setting up lawsuits, no doubt, and defending this guy, telling us how he was just starting to turn his life around. We'll hear all of that. But in a situation like this, if you simply, A, don't have stolen handguns and illegal drugs to begin with, and B, comply with the cops, you're not going to get killed. And so we'll see how all of this unfolds, but I know that the people who make a living out of agitating events like this, they are already laying out their strategy, their groundwork, to once again make the cops the bad guys. Next up in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Big Local.
Meanwhile, we have seen, like with that story, that so many of the problems we have around here, the homelessness that's everywhere, the heroin addiction. We have attracted the dregs of our nation's society to the Puget Sound area because the word is out. There is no better place in the country to be a druggie than here in the Puget Sound area. For Governor Jay Inslee, he's made it just a big punchline when he goes on HBO.
We got the best weed in the United States.
Okay, best weed in the United States. It's all hilarious. But it also is a contributing factor to why we have attracted so many homeless people. And as I told you, Denver, Colorado also legalizing marijuana. Denver has seen a huge uptick in homelessness, as has Seattle. And the reason is a lot of people admit that they have moved to Colorado, to Washington, because weed is legal. And not everybody who smokes weed is a bad person. There are a lot of good, decent, functioning people. But if smoking pot is such a driving force in your life that you make decisions on where you're going to live based on marijuana being legal, that's a loser. And so that's what we're attracting here, is a lot of losers. And that's why we have this homelessness crisis around here. So what do? Well, in King County, Snohomish County, they've legalized heroin and meth in personal possession amounts. They will not prosecute them, according to the county prosecutors. For Jay Inslee, he just announced this morning that he is going to vacate all marijuana convictions. Now, again, these are people who broke the existing law at the time, but because he wants to reinforce that we are the most drug-friendly area in the country, because bizarrely, Jay Inslee, we told you yesterday that he's running for president, and he says he's running on climate change And he's running on, apparently, making us the drug capital of the United States. So he's vacating all convictions for marijuana now.
Thousands of people have on their records a criminal conviction for something that is legal today. And this is impairing their ability to reach their dreams and live their lives and raise their children. Those convictions sometimes can impair their ability to finance a house. It can impair their ability to get a shot at a good job. It can stop them even sometimes from taking their kids for a field trip. And in itself, having a criminal convictions on your record is just not a healthy thing for people.
Okay, so don't break laws that lead to misdemeanor convictions. But Jay Inslee says, and it's if you only have one and it's a misdemeanor, then they're going to vacate it. So it is the continuing policy. Jay Inslee has decided that he's got to go all in as far left as possible. And so he talks about how we have the best weed, how he's going to vacate convictions for weed. We've legalized heroin and meth in King and Snohomish counties. And we're seeing the manifestation of all of that on the streets all around here. It's quite the nirvana that he has crafted. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
First, let's go check the news for you. And then, Seahawks playoffs begin tomorrow afternoon right here on your home of the Seahawks, 97.3 Cairo FM. And Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks, is going to spend the next half hour with us. The last word from the coach, exclusively on the Dory Monson Show, coming up next.
This is the Pete Carroll Show.
Here we go.
On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks. The Pete Carroll Show is presented by Les Schwab and Bellevue Rare Coins. Now with Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll, here's Dory Monson.
Well, usually we say the day before, but now it's just the day before because tomorrow evening the Seahawks in Dallas to take on the Cowboys and the Pete Carroll Show begins. Hey, coach, great to talk to you today.
What's up, Dory? Happy New Year.
How about this postseason time of year? This is kind of fun, isn't it?
Oh, gosh, yeah, it sure is. This is why we battle so we can get to this point and have a chance to do something really special, and everybody's enjoying the heck out of it.
How much did you miss this part of the season last year? Did it just eat at you when you weren't part of this?
Yeah, it was really hard. It felt like it was so out of place and so much in the wrong place, and we spent a lot of years battling to stay there, and so last year was really difficult. But sometimes, as much as I hate to learn the hard way, Dory, it just pushes you to do things and make some good choices and kick yourself in the butt now and then and get yourself back up and get right, And so it's been a fantastic season. Off season was exciting, and all the way through it, unfortunately, we stumbled a little bit early to make it even harder, But then again, here we go. Maybe our young guys need to learn the lessons. We all need to learn it, and let's go do something with it now.
Well, and when you say you kicked yourself in the butt, it's awfully gratifying that a butt kicking isn't for nothing. You actually made a lot of really cool, correct decisions going forward.
Well, I'm pleased with where we are and excited about the players that we've added, the choices we make. All those guys that make the team, every one of those is a choice, and you choose the guy to come here, and then you got to figure out if he fits, and then you got to let somebody else go in place of this guy, and then you got to hopefully make something, that decision. And so it's just been an ongoing process of competing, and it's really been fun. It's been great to do it with John. He's been, and we've been side by side throughout all of it, and we're both excited about where we can go.
And, I look at some of those decisions you've made, and early on in your and John's career, you were finding all of these gems in the later round. And then there were a couple of drafts that just weren't quite up to that standard. But I look at, Chris Carson just named the NFC Offensive Player of the Month. This was a seventh round draft pick. And I mean, you seem to be back to finding those gems that aren't just solid, but are elite.
Well, I appreciate that thought, but it's, you know, we're always competing to do that. You just don't always hit it, you know. But, you know, and Chris is a really good story, and Trey Flowers is a good story. Puna Ford is a good story. You know, guys that have come on and done some great things. And also, like, picking out guys like Jerron Brown that has been such a good role player for us and done so many good things. You know, there's just lots of good stories on this club, and they're fun to see them surface and see guys – you know, find their place and establish themselves and be accepted by their teammates, and the teammates loving them up and all. It's just all good stuff feeding off of one another. Just keeps adding to the whole story about this club.
When you have a game like you had last Sunday against Arizona, are there some positives in having a game like that, in that they exposed, you know, the special teams issues, or, you know, the six sacks? And I know that was a makeshift offensive line. But is there a benefit in the struggle that was the win over Arizona that maybe you wouldn't have learned as much if it'd been a blowout?
There's always that way, you know. Dory, you've coached long enough. You know that sometimes you gotta see things from a different perspective sometimes, and you just need to be checked, and you need to make sure that everything is kept tight and connected like it's supposed to be. We had a couple errors on special teams last week that can lose a football game for you. It didn't, and we're fortunate that we learned and we took it to heart, and the guys on the special teams were really, really upset that they were factored into that game in that manner, and so they've stepped, you know, to, I think, the next step up, and that it happened a couple weeks ago in OT, and we had the game, the Niners, with all the penalties were such an issue, and man, we slammed the door shut on that the last 2 weeks. You know, only had four penalties in the last 2 weeks. So I'm hoping that we close in on another area where we can really make sure we're back to it. We've had a really good year special teams wise, but then there's been some spots, you know, and it's really young guys maintaining the consistency of the unbelievable intensity they have to hold, you know, and you have to learn how to do that. And so I think this awareness of this week in particular could really help us and benefit us. And so we'll see if we can, you know, the factor of the penalties out of it, the factors of the special teams out of it, and put it right back to let's run the football for 180 yards and see what happens, you know, and see how we play if we keep them in front of us on defense. I mean, yeah. That's how you put this together, you know. It ain't all neat and clean all the time. And I know our fans want it to be that way, but it's hard, you know, and we've got to bounce back from those kinds of setbacks, learn from them, and keep putting it out in front of us, and we get stronger when we do that.
I thought about you a lot earlier this week because, especially on Monday, but it started to happen on Sunday, there were, I believe, 8 coaching changes. And I know that you went through that a couple times in your first go-rounds in the NFL. If you had been given 3, 4, 5 years in those gigs with the Jets, the Patriots, would you have figured things out the way that you eventually did at USC, or did you need to have the adversity of getting canned in order to lift yourself to the level you're at now?
I'm not going to admit to that. I didn't think I needed to get canned. I think I could have worked it out.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, though, it helped. I mean, I learned so much. And really, I learned so much coming out of the New England experience. You know, the Jets thing was just, that was Steve Wilkes. You know, you got one shot and you're out of there, you know. And then, that guy's a good ball coach. And he didn't get a shot. He didn't get a chance to show how he can grow and learn and do it. I mean, that was the same deal as I had. And I hope he gets another chance that he'll prove it better than ever the next time, you know. And so, but the New England experience, you know, we were pretty good in New England. We went to the playoffs 2 of 3 years, you know, and people don't remember that. We weren't a losing team at all, but it still was a great experience. Expectations were higher and they needed to make a change, so they did. But what comes out of that is what happened at SC, you know, and the philosophy and approach and the attention to the detail of what was representative of our, you know, what our beliefs were all about came to light in a better way because of the crap we had to go through, you know, and so got better because of it. So it all counts. It all pays. It's all part of it, you know. I always say that I would like it, let the other guys learn the hard way, but that's not what's best. You know, you got to go through the struggles, and then you got to pick yourself back up, and you got to find your belief in what you're doing, and find your belief in, you know, who you are and all that to come back. So it's all part of the experience. And I hope the guys that did get their troubles this time around and they get knocked out, you know, don't don't think that that was it, and they don't think that that's the end of the story. That's the start of the story, or at least in the middle of the book, you know. And there's a lot to be written, and so I know that's the case, and so I just hope guys get the chance to prove that.
Well, and that's what I say all the time, Pete. Is, you know, people ask me if I have any regrets, and I think I would be a fool to express regret about anything in life, because all of it is the sum total of where I am now. And I have a wonderful family and a wonderful job and a wonderful life. And that adversity, it kind of sucks at the time, but it's part of that, you know, that palette that paints the picture of your life. And so I think it's ridiculous to have regrets over almost anything.
Yeah, but we know so many people that are listening too, that you get discouraged, you know, and you get down, and sometimes you just can't see how it's going to turn. And that's where you hope that spark stays in you, or that the spark is transferred to you from somebody that you love or that cares about you, so that you keep battling and you find your belief that brings you on back, because it's that power of believing that you can do it and nothing's going to hold you back that gets you back. It doesn't just happen, you know, and that sometimes it needs to be, that flame needs to be turned up a little bit in some way or another, and we need a friend, we need a loved one, we need that challenge, we need an example in our life that proves to us that we got a lot left and we got a lot to prove still, and so we keep battling. And when we do that, as long as we're battling, we're always doing the right thing. You know, we're going in the right direction. So, it's hard. It's hard sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's not good.
Look at this. It's like I'm talking to Tony Robbins all of a sudden. I've got a motivational speaker on the other end of the line here. I like this.
Now you got me fired up. You always kind of tap into something. You got to quit doing this.
No, I'm not going to quit doing this, Pete. I'm going to keep getting you fired up. It's my job. Okay, hold on, Coach. Pete Carroll is with us. He'll spend the rest of the half hour with us, and we will talk about the game coming up tomorrow, a Saturday game. It's a 5:15 p.m. kickoff Seattle time. That means that we will be on the air at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, and I will be in Dallas with all of my pregame co-hosts to bring you all of the action, because if you want the latest and the best Seahawks coverage, this is the place to be. 97.3 Cairo FM, your home of the Seattle Seahawks. So we'll talk more about what to expect in this game against the Cowboys as our conversation with Seahawks coach Pete Carroll continues in just a moment. It's the Pete Carroll Show right here on the Dory Monson Show. We are back with the coach of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll. His Seahawks take on the Cowboys tomorrow afternoon and evening in Dallas. I will be there in Dallas. My first time in the new stadium. I went to the old Texas Stadium a few times, but this will be my first time in this billion-dollar palace that they've built down there. So the game starts at 5:15. I'll be on the air with all of my pregame co-hosts at 2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon, coming to you live from Dallas. Pete Carroll is with us. And, Pete, we were talking about all of the coaching changes in the NFL. If you were a team owner, if it was your call, and you had to decide on who you want to lead your franchise as a coach, would you go with an NFL offensive or defensive coordinator? Would you go with a college head coach with lots of experience?
Yeah, the answer is yes. You got to look wherever, you know.
Okay.
These jobs are hard to figure out, the job description and what it fill, you know, how to fill it. It's hard on the owners. You know, some of these guys are business guys in another world. They got to figure out how to translate that. It's hard. And you can see that they're often not happy with their choices, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's a difficult task. And who's got the upbringing to know how to pick a coach? You know, I mean, it's hard. So it's why I think there's so much change all the time.
Yep. Okay. A couple weeks ago, J.R. Sweezy had his injury, and you said it's usually a 3 to 4 week recovery. He's going to do it in two. I heard you say that again earlier this week, and I talked with you about this a couple years ago because I had a player who got injured, and I was pretty down. And you talked about you truly believe that the human mind can will its way to faster healing, don't you?
Well, yeah, I think you can bring all the positive stuff in your direction if you go for it in that manner. People do it all the time. You know, we see people all the time, and they're not supposed to be healed, and then they are, and other ones are told they're done, and they are. You know, so I think it's what you believe is what gives you the best chance. And so, Sweezy happens to be he is such a tough kid, and he is not for a second thinking he's not going to play. You know, and so I'm just adding to it and building on him and following his lead. He's one of those guys, you know, and not everybody's like that, but if somebody can do it, he will. If it can't be done, then it couldn't get done. And so he's going for it. We'll find out in the next couple of days.
Okay. And a couple other injuries for tomorrow's game. DJ Fluker, Tedrick Thompson, how are they looking?
Those guys are going to come back and play. And unless barring anything right off the game day, they've had really good weeks. The vibe's been really positive. They're into it. They're ready. Their teammates are kind of counting on them, and I think that's coming through.
Okay. Last thing, just tell me a little bit about the Cowboys. You played them earlier this year. How are they different? How are you different from that game?
They're really balanced. You know, since we've played them, you know, well, take the last, they're seven of the last eight games, they've won. Everything's been tight. They've had some good come from behind wins. They run the ball. They don't turn it over. They play good D. They're good on teams. So they're a really well-rounded football team, and they get to play at their place. So they're going to be tough, and we're going to have to do really well in all areas to play a good football game to get those guys.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk again next week. That means the season's still rolling, and I can keep the Pete Carroll revival show going for another week.
There you go. I'm going to set up a 10 out here.
Okay. All right. Pete, all right, go get him. We'll see you down there.
Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Okay, Pete Carroll, the coach of the Seahawks, joining us as he does every Friday before a game weekend. And I really do enjoy my conversations with the man. So I hope you do as much fun as it is for me to talk with him. So, you know, think about this. They're a day away from a huge playoff game, and he doesn't give the stock answers. He doesn't give the cliche answers. He's always listening with the intent to try to give me interesting stuff. And I always appreciate that about Coach Carroll. So my thanks to Pete Carroll for coming on and joining us this afternoon, as he does every game Friday. Okay, and again, that game against the Dallas Cowboys, this should be a good one. Wild card weekend. It is a 5:15 start tomorrow afternoon, Seattle time. And that means I'll be on the air live from Dallas, 2:00. I'll be joined by Paul Moyer, Jordan Babineau, Michael Bumpus. They will all be with me down in Dallas as we get you ready. And there'll be lots of breaking news during our pregame broadcast, because we'll get the inactives for the game while we are on the air. And it'll be interesting to see which Seahawks are able to answer the call, because they were pretty banged up toward the end of the season. So we'll have a lot of news for you during our pregame coverage. So while you're hanging out Saturday afternoon, getting ready for football, just make sure you have your radio on and join us here on Cairo Radio, your home of the Seattle Seahawks. We have much more to do, including we'll check the news for you here at the top of the hour, and then the Fastest 15, that is coming up next as the Dory Monson Show rolls on.